Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by Los Angeles Community Policing and the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. I founded those organizations, and I am myself a longtime person in recovery from child abuse. Joining me in just a few minutes are special guests for tonight. They represent an organization called Deirdre's House, which is one of what's called a child advocacy center, a CAC. We're going to talk about CACs. There are CACs around the country. This one is in Morris County, New Jersey. So again, we're welcoming Maria and Judy from Deirdre's House as our special guests for tonight's show. And we'll be with them in just a moment. We have community participation on all our shows, and there are two ways for you to do this. First of all, you can be in our chat room, which is we always run with our shows. We do recommend that you get a screen name at Blog Talk Radio if you want to be active in the chat room, because although you can be in there as a guest, you can't type as a guest. You have to have a screen name at Blog Talk Radio in order to type in the chat room. You're certainly welcome as a guest, but you can see what other people type and can't type yourself that way. So get a screen name at Blog Talk, which you only have to do once. It takes 1 minute. And in subsequent visits, you will be recognized and automatically logged in, and then you'll be able to participate in the chat room. Also, we will be opening up the phone lines to the general public about halfway through the show, and we always do that as well by way of giving you an opportunity to interact and ask questions of our special guests. I do have a couple of panelists that I want to quickly introduce. One just dropped off. Okay, Ed, if you call back in, I'll include you. I'd like to include you. But I have Carol D. Levine, there he is, from New Jersey as the first panelist. Carol Levine, we use the middle initial D, is an author of a book called Panic Child, The Harrowing True Story of Sexual Abuse and Neglect. And she, like me, has long-term recovery from her child abuse issues, in her case, 30 years. She considers herself about 85% healed, but Carol is one of our most consistent volunteers, and so we welcome Carol Levine from New Jersey. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Bill. Happy to be here.
We're delighted to have you, too, and the two ladies from Deirdre's House are holding on, so we won't waste time. We'll get right to them. But as soon as I introduce one more panelist who's called in, and I appreciate that he's done so, this is Ed Mashick. Ed Mashick is from Florida, and he is, again, a engaged volunteer with NASCA, and he's a little newer to his recovery process, but he's doing great, and we're always delighted for him to join in and be a panelist on our show. Ed Mashick from Florida. Hi, Ed. How you doing?
Hi, Bill. Hi, Carol. I'm glad to be here tonight.
Oh, so am I. So am I. It's a good night to be here. We're going to learn a lot about an organization that I think you'll really appreciate what they do. And they are representative of some other organizations that around the country are known as child advocacy centers, and we'll get into that as far as one of the another segment. But first, let me do this. Let me bring them both on the air. Okay, joining us first, both are Maria Vinci Savatieri, I want to say that right, and Judy Rolla. Maria is the executive director, and Judy Rolla is the director of programs. They both have worked at Theaters House for some time, and that's in Morris County, New Jersey, which is in commuting distance to New York. I actually lived in Morris County at one time in my life for a couple of years. Judy knew this, but Maria didn't. So welcome, ladies, to our show.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, now you have to get us used to who is who by your voice. So, Maria, you say thank you first.
Hi, Bill. Thank you. This is Maria.
That's right. You were the first one to speak. Okay, and Judy?
Hi, this is Judy. Thanks for having us.
Hey.
We're glad to be here tonight.
All right. We're going to... We've had multiple guests on before, like you're doing now, and it's kind of a tag team type thing. It'll be up to you, unless I ask specifically of one or the other of you to make a specific answer to a question, but I want you to both feel free to enjoy this. This is a conversation, you know, but with some real meaning behind it. And as you know, we're very dedicated to all the solution-oriented topics around the issue of child abuse. And you ladies certainly represent that for us, and we're really grateful that there are groups like yours for the kids that are going through traumas. And in a nutshell, who would like to be the one that describes in a nutshell what Deirdre's House is or what a child advocacy center is, or would you like me to do that, either one of you, or I could do it?
I can do that, Bill. This is Maria.
All right, Maria.
Basically, the idea behind a child advocacy center is a place where a child can feel free to tell their story and not be re-traumatized by the system that is trying to help them. After a child has experienced abuse or neglect or has witnessed domestic violence, many times are extremely traumatized. The
right.
system shouldn't be re-traumatizing the child by simply the process of bringing the perpetrator to justice and getting that child help. And that's the whole idea
right.
behind a child advocacy center. A child advocacy center is a child-friendly place. Deirdre's House actually is in a restored Victorian, so it looks like someone's home. And we want a child, when they're walking in and they come to the front door and we open the front door, you can see the kids visibly relaxed because they're walking into a home-like setting. So
mm-hmm.
immediately they're relaxed and we can get them into a place where they feel free to tell law enforcement, which comes to the center, about the horrific details of what has happened to them. And the way it works
mm-hmm.
in New Jersey is really law enforcement only has one shot at getting an interview because if they re-interview a child, then the defense can come back and say somehow in the interim the child was coached. So it's very important that a child be emotionally ready to tell their story. And that's part of the reasons that we have a child advocacy center. There are child advocacy centers throughout the country. We belong to an organization called the National Children's Alliance, which is our accrediting organization. So
mm-hmm.
basically what happens is when a child is brought to the center, someone from our prosecutor's office or local law enforcement, depending on the age of the child, will interview the child, and that will be recorded on a high-resolution DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being for this, and many survivors can appreciate this, is we only want the child to have to tell their story once. We don't want them to have to keep reliving it by telling it over and over again. So their statement is digitally recorded, and anyone that will have to view that statement can view it at any time, and the child doesn't have to keep retelling it and reliving it.
Mm-hmm.
Once they give their statement, then also we have a specially trained pediatrician who has completed a fellowship in the diagnosis and treatment of child abuse. And she is a really integral part of the process because she's not only the expert witness of choice if the case goes to trial, but she can rule child abuse in and she can rule it out. Because everyone knows that children sometimes do get injured and it's not necessarily child abuse. And she's an expert at actually spotting whether or not it's child abuse or whether or not it's a childhood injury that's normal in the course of a childhood. Then Once the child has been physically examined and treated, they then come back to Deidre's house on an ongoing basis for clinical counseling. So it's sort of like one-stop shopping. The child gets very used to being in one place. They're not being moved from a police station to a hospital emergency room and then to a third location for counseling. They get very used to being in a very home-like, warm setting, and they get used to the staff, and they're very comfortable being there. So therefore, you're not traumatizing the child further by the sheer process of bringing them through healing and the prosecution of the perpetrator.
Okay. Now, you said a whole lot of things, and we're going to go back and we're going to talk about each one of those things individually later. But let me tell people who are not even familiar with what we're talking about that with the issues of child abuse, well, in our case, Maria, we really deal with three parts of the issues of child abuse, and we call them prevention, intervention, and recovery. We don't as heavily as an organization deal with the criminal aspects or the changes in the law or, you know, crime stories. But of course, we have to understand all those things in order to discuss the other things. But we're really here to help in the healing of people who have already been abused or traumatized and the prevention of, you know, and intervention that we think can eventually someday, at least hopefully, put a dent in the statistics, which we feel are alarming. And you guys really fit very nicely into that definition of what we do because I think you also have some prevention programs, or if you don't, then you partner with people who do.
No, but we actually do have a very active prevention program.
Right.
We run conferences twice a year that are specifically targeted.
We're going to talk about that, too. And by the way, we should tell people your website, web address. It's in the link of the show as well, but it's simple enough. It's Deirdre's with an S house.org. We're going to refer to that your website, of course, throughout the show. But what I'm saying is, you have a really full service in an integrated program that allows for not only intervention, which is a lot of what you just described, but even prevention, the upfront stuff, and we'll talk about that all too. We're here to talk about the solution, and you do a lot of the solution under one roof. In a child-friendly environment where, as you say, they're not re-traumatized by having to go to the police station, having to go to the emergency room, having to go to the prosecutor's office for interviews, whatever it is. And in fact, let's ask Judy to describe the physical layout of the place because I know that has a lot to do with why children are comfortable. It's just a child-friendly environment. What do we mean by that, Judy?
Well, excuse me, when you're talking about a child-friendly environment, child advocacy centers are actually put together to meet a set of standards that the National Children's Alliance puts out. And one of them, one of the most important, is a child-focused or child-friendly environment. And a lot of that just has to do with the look of the facility and the look of the people who are in the facility. The law enforcement officers who come over to do our interviews are in plain clothes. They're not in uniforms. They're not allowed to have their weapons on. So there's no guns on holsters. The children will come into the building. There's a playroom right away when they walk in that has toys and DVDs and things that can make them comfortable. Our therapists utilize a lot of play therapy, so there's dollhouses and different toys, Legos, for the boys like to put the Legos together for them to work with as well. And the environment is just made to be relaxing and comfortable. It's not meant to be a clinical setting that makes children feel – if you think back to what it was like as a child, if you brought a child to a police station, the first thing they think is, I've done something wrong. I'm in trouble.
Right.
So
right.
To come into a home environment where there's toys and something that looks like someone's living room makes them feel like they're coming to a friendly place, and then they feel much more comfortable. Our staff comes and greets them. They sit down and play with the children, and this way they're going to say, oh, okay, well, I'm going downstairs to talk to Detective so-and-so, who's also friendly, who's also someone I can trust. And so the environment actually sets up an atmosphere of trust and, where the children can feel safe to share their story. Another big part of the Child Advocacy Center is that we're in a offender-free facility. No offenders are allowed in the building. If it's discovered during the course of the interview that the person that accompanies the child is the offender, they would be asked to leave the building so that the child knows that the person who might have done this to them is not sitting upstairs, so that they feel that this is a totally safe place for them to share their story.
Okay. So not only the physical environment, which, as you say, there's some guidelines that you have to follow, but there are obviously things that have been recognized as being child-friendly, but also the staff and the various people that come in and out from other organizations are all specialists in this area, and they're trained to be child friendly too. In other words, so
yes.
the whole object to that, Maria, is to not re-traumatize someone who's just experienced, you know, trauma who you've discovered. Someone's discovered. You know, we're going to go through a story or two, maybe if you can think of one in a moment. But first, let me not waste too much more time by getting you introduced to the couple other panelists who are here, so that we can get the ball rolling. First of all, this is Carol D. Levine. Carol is one of our activists and an abuse survivor from New Jersey. Carol, you have had a little bit of interaction with Deirdre's house, so you're back. You're on the air with Judy and Maria.
Hello, Judy. Hi, Maria. I'm so glad that you're able to make our show, and you are one of my heroes. Yes, you are. I just want
Hi,
to know
hey,
that.
Carol.
I was the one that was taken to the police department when I was a kid when I lived in New York. So after being kidnapped and raped, so I can, you know, this is a wonderful organization. We need this all, you know, throughout the country, everywhere. Because when children are so abused, they have to, if you take them to a child-friendly place, which is what you offer, number one, the child does relax, excuse me, more. And you're able to get more of a proper story from them, I believe, because I remember how distracted I was. I remember looking at the guns. I remember looking with the uniforms. I remember the people. And I was pulled out in front of my peers in school to go downtown to look at mugshots. It was very, very upsetting. And I'd already been kidnapped and raped. So that was, you know, your organization is very, very good and very much needed everywhere.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Carol. And let's bring on Ed Mashick also. Ed is from Florida in the Vero Beach area. Ed, you're on the air with Maria and Judy now.
Just glad to be here. You know, I've talked to many people who work with child advocacy centers in other states over the years, and I'm very anxious to hear what they have to say about it and what they're doing. You know, I know we've had other people on from New Jersey, and New Jersey is one of the few states that seems to actually offer some kind of funding for these centers. So I'm, you know, anxious to hear about the programs.
Okay. Well, we might as well ask how the funding is done right away, since you brought it up, Ed. Who would like to describe, Maria or Judy, how you're funded? And you've been in existence a while, so that may have changed over the years since 1994 when you were established. But, yeah, tell us.
This is Maria. Yeah. My primary responsibility as executive director is to make sure that the center is financially stable.
Mm-hmm.
There are three types of centers. There are hospital-based centers, which are located in hospitals. There are prosecutorial-based, which are actually part of a county's prosecutor's office. And then there are independent 501c3s. We happen to be an independent 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, every dollar that goes into our budget must be raised. At this point in time, we have minimal support from the state. It depends on year by year whether or not our Department of Children and Families hands out certain grants, and they're competitive grants, and some years we get them and some years we don't. But they're not a very large part of our operating budget. In Morris County, the county contributes the building. But the rest of our budget, which is about $525,000, we must raise through writing grants, which Judy helps me out with quite a bit, fundraising through different events. We have a gala and a golf outing, and grant writing and contributions from corporations in the community, particularly in Morris County. A lot of the pharmaceuticals are very supportive, like Merck and Bayer and Novartis and Lonza Pharmaceuticals. We also rely heavily on small family operations like Landeis Treadmills and Service Metal Fabricators. So we have to go out every single year. I feel like a lot of the times it's like Sisyphus in the Greek legend pushing up the rock, because every
right.
year I have to go and raise every single dime. We don't have a stable base of funding, for instance. If the state would give us a certain floor of funding and we raise the rest, every year I have to go out and raise every dollar, which can be challenging.
That
right,
is something.
Every year the rock rolls back down, huh?
Exactly.
that is something in other states that other states have put in legislative mandates that do fund and do provide some support to child advocacy centers, so that is something that we as a group of child advocacy centers throughout the state are always looking at and researching as to potentially, hoping to someday have in New Jersey, but right now that is not the case here. But there are other states that do provide some kind of a legislative mandate. So,
Okay. And, of course, we are hoping that with there is a renewed interest in the issues of child abuse and in the seriousness of this as a problem, that it will become easier for you and for everyone who deals with these kinds of issues to raise the funds you need. But we do want you to know what big fans all of us are, not just the three on the panel, but all of us are. We've been talking about the upcoming show tonight because we know, we've all lived child abuse. we're experienced from the perspective of that's been our life, We didn't have the benefit of what you're offering the kids of today, and it's a wonderful service and a much needed one from our perspective, one that we wish that we had had. So let's do this. Let's bring a child into the front door. Let's say now, how would they be? You cover not just child sexual abuse, but you also cover trauma from physical abuse, from emotional trauma. Maybe the witnessing of a crime would traumatize a child enough to make use of your services. And, of course, neglect would, too. Go ahead and pick a case, and it can be a fabricated case, but discover a child and bring them in the front door and take us with them on a little bit of a journey. Take us along with him or her on a little bit of a journey through what they might experience, or at least early on in what you have to offer.
Well, a typical child visit will happen. We get a call from either the Division of Child Protection and Permanency in New Jersey or the County Prosecutor's Office, and they'll let us know that a child is coming with either the non-offending caregiver, if that can't be determined, by the caseworker that has been assigned to them.
Okay.
And we make sure that the center is ready and prepared to greet that child properly and get them ready to go through the interview process. So when the child arrives, typically what will happen is our child advocate, who is experienced in dealing with children who have just experienced extreme trauma, she'll greet the child and whoever accompanies the child and bring them into the center. Her job is to then have the child settle in for about 15-20 minutes, so the child is emotionally ready to speak to the detective that will be interviewing the child. So the detective will come over, and they're specially trained in a technique called finding words, which helps the child tell their story without leading them with leading questions that can be impugned later by the defense. So the detective will come over. He or she are in plain clothes. They come over from the sex crimes unit of the county prosecutor's office, and they greet the child and they explain to them that they're just going to be talking with them for a little while. The detective then accompanies the child to one of our three interview rooms. And the reason we have three is they have to be age appropriate. So one room will be for very young children. There's pictures, there's wallpaper with dogs and cats on the wall. And then there'll be another room that's for little older kids. And then another room that's really for adolescents.
Wow,
each room is equipped with hidden cameras throughout the room. And the detective will accompany the child into the room. And the child will be seated across from the detective. While this is going on, in a nearby control room, we have special recording equipment, DVD recording equipment, that will record the child's statement. And anyone that has to view the interview in real time will be seated also in that room.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interview takes about 30 minutes. The first part of the interview, the detective is just getting the child ready by talking about, you know, do you know your colors, your numbers? They ask them what they call the individual members of their family, because in each culture, children call their people who live with them or their relatives by different names. We also
right.
establish what the children call the different parts of their body, so
mm-hmm.
that the detective will know what the child is talking about, because, again, in different households and cultures, children have different phrases for the parts of their body. So
right.
The child will then be interviewed on DVD, and in the control room this will be recorded. And the staff of the Child Advocacy Center, which is very important, does not have access to the interviews. We never view the interviews in real time. We never view the recordings, because we never wanted to be said that we had unduly influenced the interview or somehow tampered with it.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't
mm-hmm.
have any, even though we own the equipment, it's password protected, and only the detectives from the prosecutor's office know that password.
Okay.
They will use anatomically correct dolls in the interview. Then
mm-hmm.
the next step is either that day or very soon after, the child will meet with our on-staff physician, who comes to us from Hackensack Regional Medical Center, and she's specially trained, as I said before, in the diagnosis and treatment of child abuse. She'll examine the child, and she will document through photographs and through her own notes the child's injuries, which then can be used later on in the criminal case.
Mm-hmm.
After that, the child then will be scheduled to meet with one of the three of our on-staff clinical counselors, which, as you know, as survivors, is incredibly important in the healing process. That
you know what?
I always
I'm going to pause here. I want to come back to this in a second, but let me, because you say an awful lot of stuff in each segment that I don't want us to skip over. We're going to come back to this because this, as you say, is a really important piece of the pie. But I want to reiterate one thing you said. First, one of the first things you said is by the non-offending caregiver.
Yeah.
And what people need to hear and understand through our show, we are a little bit anxious for the correct kinds of statistics to get out into the community. So
yeah.
What we generally remind people that although in our society, we clearly warn our children against stranger danger the most of the time. The danger is really from within either the immediate family, the extended family, or the community of people who the child is supposed to be able to trust and love, and like a caregiver
yes,
or a
absolutely.
Teacher or a counselor. But an awful lot of times, 30% of the time, it's a parent, and another 30% of the time, these are the kinds of figures we use, it's roughly one-third of the time, it's an extended family member. You know, so 93% of the time, they say, it's not a stranger. It's someone the child is supposed to be able to know, love, or trust. So only 7% of the time is it a stranger. Now, because of that, the first thing the child might have to encounter is really outside your agency, someone they might be in the care of a third party then. And as you said, it could be someone bringing them to you who's not a caregiver, not a family member, not someone they knew prior to their traumatization. And it could be would they be a county employee then? Or
they would be a caseworker that comes yes, from the Division of Children and Families.
Okay, and then would a child that's in the custody of a caseworker, in the company of a caseworker, be returning to a facility, an overnight type place with that caseworker, rather than returning home if that was the case?
Well, if they really believe that the child is not safe at home,
right.
and they can't guarantee the child's safety, then they will place the child at a foster home.
Okay.
So normally what happens is the child is removed. They try to have a foster home immediately lined up for that same day.
Yes. And that is important, too, because one of the things you're trying to do is to get them the services as quickly as possible. Obviously,
absolutely.
the forensic interview or the word, what did you call it? Word Sense interview?
Finding words.
I'm sorry. Finding Words interview and the physical examination too need to happen fairly close to the any incident that they're trying to find out about. You're trying to find out, or the staff there is trying to find out about. And so that all these things, the ball starts rolling pretty quickly.
And
with the exception, then I guess of actually housing the child, an awful lot of it's happening under your one roof, the same
yes.
place the child comes back to, and they, of course, become familiar with you know, being treated a certain way, a friendly way, and a non-re-traumatizing way under your roof. All right, let's ask Carol and Ed to join us here. I'll bring them on in the same order they did before to make any comment or ask any question about what they've heard so far up till the physical examination. Then we'll get into the ongoing treatment that might be necessary beyond that. But, Carol, what do you think about what you've heard so far? It's much better than what you experienced, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
I know.
Well, you know, actually, I'm a mixed bag, if you will, package here, because I was abused first when I was between 6 and 7 and a half by an uncle. Okay,
right.
Before I even got kidnapped and raped. And
right.
And I saw all kinds of domestic abuse before that between my mother and father. That's why I was with an aunt and uncle while my mother was getting her divorce. And he was a pedophile. Now,
right.
If I'd had someone to tell, then I would have been removed from that house much sooner, thankfully. That would have been a wonderful thing. And taken to possibly a safe house. Do you have something like a safe house, or is it foster? When you say foster home, is that the same thing as a safe house?
Well, they do have, depending on the age of the child, they
mm-hmm.
have foster families who are ready to take children on an emergency basis. Basically, you know, as soon as within hours to, you know, just later in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the time what does happen, another service that we do offer, is that if a child's been removed from their home, we've had several children who are removed in the middle of the night, and a foster family is available the next day, but not until a little bit later in the afternoon because of work. They can actually come to our facility with their caseworker and stay at the facility so that they're not staying in an office or a diner or, you know, McDonald's waiting to be able to go to the foster home. So the foster
mm-hmm.
homes are available relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm.
There is not, per se, a place, kind of like a shelter, where the kids go. It's really an individual foster home that's vetted by the state.
Okay.
Right.
I used to live in Florham Park, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, not far from Morristown at all. Yeah, actually, I don't really have any questions. I just wish you'd been there when I was there, you know, when I was, so needing help, you know, because...
All right, well, there's a lot more to talk about, and you're going to have some questions in a minute here.
Yeah.
Because we're going to have, we have a full 90 minutes with these ladies, but we've already gone through it more than a third of our show, and it's going to go very quickly, I predict.
Right, right.
Let's bring Ed on, see if he has a comment or a question about what he's heard so far up until... The therapy that we're going to hear about in a moment. Ed, what's your reaction to what you've heard?
Well, I'm amazed that, you know, as closely as they work with law enforcement, that they don't get more funding, or that they're not completely funded by the state. That amazes me. You know, it doesn't surprise me, but it amazes me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I definitely agree with Carol. I wish somebody was there, you know, when I was that age. You know, I didn't... When you're, you know, we know that most oftentimes, you know, statistically, the abuse is from a family member. So,
right.
You know, letting kids know that there's somebody else to talk to, if that's happening, you know, that, I think that's the most important thing. You know, I'm a strong believer in that we need to stop, or not stop, but, you know, a solution to this problem doesn't come with educating adults. It comes with educating children, the potential victims. To knowing that there is help out there. So,
mm-hmm. Well, of course, it's both. We need to educate adults too, because I really think that we'll turn a curve when we convince the community that it is responsible for the children, whether they're their children or not. and
yeah.
you know, what kinds of signs to look for and what to do about it, and how to report suspicions and so forth. We really need an army of these people, and they are going to come from the regular community on account of the fact that so many children are, you know, abused by people that they, as I said, no love or trust. They're supposed to be able to trust. This is another reason that we're a little bit hopeful now that with some of the things that have happened in recent times, that the community is going to wake up to this. But we feel it's a community responsibility for every adult to take care of every child, regardless of who the child is. At least that's just our perspective, you know, and our hope. I have one more panelist who's calling in now, and this is a former law enforcement officer with 25 years experience in law enforcement, and specifically dealt with a lot of child crime and pornography crime, too. This is John Chapman from Virginia. John, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Bill. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I don't know how much you've heard. I don't know how much you've heard so far, John, but, of course, if you had a comment or a question up till this point, otherwise we'll include you in the next round. Did you want to say hello to Maria and Judy?
Hello, Maria. Hello, Judy.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. I got one quick question for you. I think it's a phenomenal thing you're doing, because most of the interviews I've done was at social service or the police department, and then we bring the child to the hospital for the SANE exam, et cetera. So I congratulate you on having all the services in one building. I think it's a great idea. But my question is there any? Do you guys do any follow-up through victim witness, such in counseling for the child, or do you do any follow-through on that after the case has been presented to court?
Absolutely.
We
work very, very closely with the victim witness unit at the prosecutor's office. We're on the phone with them practically on a daily basis. The way it actually works in our county is we have what's called a multidisciplinary team system, and that team is comprised of the victim witness coordinator, the prosecuting attorney from the prosecutor's office. We actually mediate those meetings. There's representatives from the Division of Child Protection and Permanency in New Jersey. There's other organizations that are providing other services to the abused child that sit on this.
Sure.
And this team actually meets every other week and goes through every single case to make sure that all the needs of the child is being met, and that all the resources of the community has come to bear, and really tackle this head on. So it's a multidisciplinary team approach to every single case.
Oh, very good.
Right. And this brings us to the place where Maria and Judy were describing with the story of the child. They've already had the initial interview, which raised enough questions that it was sent to the prosecutor's office, and the prosecutor decided to move forward. They also have had a physical examination and that contributes to the decision. And now, if they are going to move forward, they're going to have to do a number of different kinds of preparations for the child, but they're also at the same time going to start the recovery of the child, the therapy of the child. So there's going to be a series of separate opportunities to work with the child. For example, to prepare them for a court appearance, I suppose, is different than to prepare them for, you know, what to expect in school next year or whatever it is. Right. So there's what kinds of programs then exists beyond the point of a decision being made that the child is going to be involved in a criminal case with the child, from the child's perspective?
One of the things that we really pay attention to at Teacher's House is that even though a child's life will be forever altered by the abuse that they've suffered, we don't want their life to be defined by it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we make sure that their life isn't their life is forever changed, we know that, but we don't want this to be the seminal event in their life. We want them to be able to go on to be successful, happy people. And the way we deal with that is we deal with it head on. We believe that the key to a child successfully getting through this process is for them to have access to free, immediate clinical counseling.
Amen.
So to that end, we have three counselors right on staff, two English-speaking and one bilingual counselor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we found in Morris County is that the counseling resources for children have pretty much disappeared. Our two local hospitals used to have extensive programs of counseling for child abuse victims. Both of those programs no longer exist.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, in New Jersey, when a child when a case is no longer open by child protection and permanency, the child no longer receives any services. So the date that that case is closed, a child does not receive any services. And unfortunately, what the criteria are is if a child is, if the parents of the child are supportive, and the perpetrator is does no longer has access to the child then does not, the case is closed, and the child does not receive any more services. And you all know as survivors that the focus should be on the victim and the victim healing, not about what is happening with the perpetrator, what is happening with the child's parents. They should be focused on now bringing to bear all the resources of the community to make sure that the child heals. And unfortunately, that's not what's happening. So we have had to step into that void. When I started, we didn't even have any clinicians on staff back in 2003. And since 2003, we now have three full-time clinicians because we know it's necessary for the children to receive clinical counseling, and not just in the short term, but in the long term.
Mm-hmm. So the case might not be followed all the way through the resolution of the criminal case against the perpetrator even? The child might not get services even that far?
No, they will not.
Wow, that's amazing. Because, of course, children may, you know, be required to appear on certain cases, I suppose.
Yeah.
They have to appear.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're, wow. Well, I think that's one of the points at which a child really needs some support. And if they've been getting it on an ongoing basis, it's just continued support for the day when they have to go to trial and they have to sit in front of a perpetrator, for example. That sounds a little short-sighted to me. We do believe in much more support for victims. And unfortunately, the truth is that only 1 in 10 kids, is found out, their case is found out in their youth. At least this is the statistic we use, which means 9 out of 10 go on into their adulthood with the story having never been told. And so there's unresolved childhood trauma that they start to deal with as adults, and for some of us, it can take, well, some of us never get it resolved, never get on a healing journey, and some of us, it doesn't even occur to us to get on a healing journey, so we've tried just about every other, possible avenue of getting a solution for ourselves, and they've all failed, and we finally surrender to the concept that maybe we should go, start dealing with our child abuse issues 10, 20, 30, 40 years later.
When I try to educate the public about the need for services for child abuse victims, I always tell them, as a society, we can pay now or we can pay later.
Oh,
and
man.
Really, it benefits the child to do it as early as possible because the price
Absolutely.
Will have to be paid at some point.
And we know the earlier that intercession is made and the process of treatment and recovery begins, the better, better off a child is, obviously.
Absolutely.
So we are big, huge fans of what you guys are doing. Let me remind the public that is listening that our special guests tonight are Maria Vinci Savaretti. Savitieri. Did I say that close?
Yes.
Okay. Executive Director, and Judy Rollin, Director of Programming at Deirdre's House, which is a child advocacy center in Morris County, New Jersey. And they are part of a system. I didn't realize there were three separate kinds until they told us, but they are of the 501c3 type. And they have a website that we want to draw your attention to at deirdreshouse.org. I'm sure they could use some support and donations because they rely on the community and fundraising events and so forth to provide them with over $500,000 annual budget, was what we were told. And, of course, we've already heard about why it costs so much. The building aside, you have quite a few people involved there. How big is the staff, the total permanent staff, and are they all paid?
Judy, you can talk about that.
Oh, yeah. We have, well, Maria mentioned our three full-time counselors.
Right.
We also have a staff person. We have, obviously, Maria, our executive director, myself,
sure,
the director of programs, and then
right,
we have a staff person who is our multidisciplinary team coordinator. She's in charge of running that multidisciplinary team and convening the case conferences, and she also acts as our child advocate. She's, you know, the first person that the families see when they come through the door, welcomes them to the center, acclimates them to the process, and then we also have a person who does community education and outreach. She coordinates,
okay,
community. We do two community conference events
right,
each year, one in October and one in April. And we
right,
also do public speaking engagements on child abuse identification, reporting, and prevention. So she helps
right,
coordinate us going out into schools, community agencies, basically anybody who wants us to come and speak. So she coordinates those events for us.
All right, and
we've
also heard about, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, we have, those are our paid staff, but then we utilize a lot of summer interns, interns from different college programs,
mm-hmm,
as well as volunteers,
mm-hmm,
who help us out with
mm-hmm,
our events and fundraising and day-to-day activities.
And, of course, there are other people who are involved in the process who take advantage of your facility, but they're paid by an outside agency, like a law enforcement officer, like
right,
the technician that runs the equipment, I guess, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Like the you didn't mention the nurse, the examiner was part of your staff, so she must be paid somewhere from somewhere else.
Right.
But like the county prosecutor's office staff that has to coordinate, and the child protective service people, they're paid outside, but they take advantage of your services and your facility, and they're all gathered at various times in this multidisciplinary place. How about the three counselors? They are paid?
Yeah.
The three, yeah,
yep,
the two English and the one bilingual. Okay.
Right.
So that's why $500,000 gets spent pretty quickly.
Yeah, and it does. It's not on office supplies and and bagels. It's on services.
We're very frugal with all our donations. When I came on in 2003, the center was very close to bankruptcy. We had about 1 month
mm-hmm,
operating in the bank. So I feel like something, sometimes like a depression-era baby. Even though we're financially stable at this point, I watch every single dollar that comes in and out of the center, and 93 cents of every dollar donated goes directly to child programs.
Right, and that's a very good ratio. For those of you who don't know, for a nonprofit to have established, seven. In other words, it costs them 7 cents to raise a dollar. Is what she's saying, and so 93 cents of it goes back into the service of every dollar that you donate as a public. So please do visit Deirdre's House, plural, Deirdre's House.org, and take a look. There is a place to make a donation there. And I'm going to open the phone lines up now, remind people that we are a community. We want to engage the community on all our shows. And the phone number to call is 646-595-2118, 646-595-2118. And then if you want to join the conversation or ask a question of Maria or Judy, it's as simple as pushing the number 1 and a pound sign, and a little symbol pops up next to a phone number here on the little software package that I have. They call it a switchboard. and it tells me that somebody wants to join the conversation or ask a question. Again, our guests are the executive director and the director of programs for Deirdre's House in Morris County, New Jersey. Morris County is within striking distance of New York City. It's a lot of people commute from Morris County into New York. In fact, that's why we lived there for a few years. My father was a commuter from Mountain Lakes, New Jersey, which is in Morris County.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go to Carol. Comment or question about what we just heard?
Well, I'm just so thankful that you have counselors there that, you know, really help the kids. Because, you know, back in the day, they didn't have counseling after that. You went to the police department like I did. You look at mugshots, and they threw the books down in front of me. They gave me a glass of milk and a jelly donut. I remember that. And I had to go back quite a few times because I just didn't see the man, you know. And I had to go to court and everything. When they did find this guy, I was one of 15 when I was kidnapped and raped. And it's a very frightening, frightening thing for a child who's already been so horribly traumatized to go into a police department, especially in the city. I mean, come on, you know, in the boroughs, those police departments are even worse than what we have out here. And so to have all of this wonderful, wonderful help that you offer definitely helps to take away the stress from the child. My healing came years ago as I started on my healing journey through a church. I found a good church that helped me. And they got me involved with Rari Lifers program and then into detention where I found a lot of kids who had been sexually abused. You see, this is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these kids, if they don't get the counseling that they need as a child, so often they end up in trouble. You know, I don't have to tell you that. You already know that. They go down the wrong paths in life, and they make a lot of mistakes, as I did, okay? And, you know, quite frankly, if I had counseling, perhaps I wouldn't have made quite so many mistakes. The only person that actually helped me after I had been raped was a CPS lady, Child Protective Services, who came to ask questions, you know, my mother and my stepfather, because I wasn't being properly watched. I wouldn't have gotten kidnapped, I didn't think, had I been watched better. And she examined me in my mother's presence, that was in the house, and she took me aside after my mother was told to leave the room, and she said, I don't ever, ever, ever want you to think that this was your fault, because it wasn't. Now, that was the only thing that I got, but I held on to that. I think you know what
right.
I mean by that. I held on to that because
right.
I didn't have anyone telling me. Well, in fact, I actually did have my mother more or less making me feel guilty, you know, for being kidnapped, that I'd gone too close to the street, and that's why I was kidnapped, okay? So I had gone through terrible post-traumatic stress disorders and panic being one. I have a book called Panic Child, A Harrowing True Story of Sexual Abuse and Neglect, because, you know, I had developed terrible panic after the abduction.
All right, let's ask that question, Carol. Let's make this into a question.
Right.
Maria. And Judy, you are back.
I am. Thank you. My phone just cut
back.
Out on me.
No.
You're back. I got you back on the line. But Carol's describing, you know, a need that goes beyond the services that you're capable of providing because you're, what is it called, jurisdiction, you're, the work that you do is defined by as ending at a time that's really earlier than when a child needs continuing therapy and attention. So Maria or Judy, what kind of associations do you have to help perhaps pass that child on to someone that would be appropriate to for continuing help if you do?
We stay with the child for as long as necessary. It's the it's the state that cuts off services. We take on most of the cases that we take on are cases that have been closed by the state, and we stay with the child as long as necessary. We have children that have been involved in our clinical counseling program for many, many years.
Okay.
And we stick with them as long as they need it.
Is there a cutoff at 18 or 21, or would they, as an adult, be passed on to somebody else? How would you do that?
No. What our rule is that as long as you've experienced the abuse as a child, you
yes.
can obtain counseling for us. So we do actually
wow.
have some adults that we counsel for childhood trauma.
Well, that's great. We are usually supportive of the concept of providing, you know, recovery processes for adults because there are so many adults who never reveal their child abuse until, you know, sometimes decades after it occurred. And in the meantime, you know, it has affected their life. They don't come to the decision to seek out recovery unless they've tried everything else. Pretty much they've hit a bottom. So somewhere.
Right.
And at that point, they're very needy. So it's not likely that they're going to be able to have, they're going to be on a fantastic insurance program or, you know, be able to pay
right.
for a lot of recovery and so forth. So we are really big advocates for groups. We know of a couple of organizations that have groups that are, one has about 90 groups around the country and the other has about 70, 75 groups around the country. But, you know, next to the need, that's a small amount of groups.
No, it is. Unfortunately, a lot of the children that come in, when we mm-hmm. actually get into their cases, we find out that their parent has experienced mm-hmm. abuse in their past. So not only do we end up having to treat the child, but we end up having to clinically counsel the parent.
Oh, well, that's nice that you do that. I mean, really, what you're referring to is the fact that sometimes this is the family, you know, the family business. This is the way...
It's
relationships
very
are expressed, yeah, and it's generational and it's passed on, so that's wonderful if you can go back to the previous generation. But at least we want to break the cycle with the current, you know, victim, which is your primary purpose. But it's great, it's terrific to hear that you will also engage with the parent that might have also, you know, experienced their own. Abuse when they were young. Let's bring Ed Masick on. And again, I'm opening the phone lines up to the general public, 646-595-2118. There's still plenty of time and plenty of things to talk about with Maria and Judy from Deirdre's house in Morris County. Ed, comment or question?
I would like to know, you know, if there's any programs specifically you guys are doing or using to... you know, educate children to make sure that children do know, you know, that that you exist, what you exist for, and how they can contact you, you know, outside of their parents' control if their parents happen to be the ones abusing them.
Right, so this talks to programming, really. And so go ahead, Ben, answer that.
Well, we're constantly going out into the community and into schools
yeah.
and into other organizations and doing community
right.
education. We also
right.
run public service announcements. And one of the venues that we use is actually movie theaters. So when kids go to
oh.
the movies, we run a campaign that runs on every show and every theater. We usually pick 1 month out of the year where the children, where there's a lot of blockbusters that are being introduced, May specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually run a PSA, which explains that it's everybody's responsibility to report child abuse, and we also instruct where and how to call.
Oh, that's great.
One of the other
that's
things
great.
We do is we do a lot of work in schools. We do a lot of education work for teachers, school counselors, administrators, because studies have shown that most children disclose abuse to teachers. Teachers are the number one source of disclosure for child abuse. So that's one of the areas where we really focus a lot of our attention as well to make sure that the schools, the teachers, the people who would be first responders essentially or the first person that a child would reach out to, that they know exactly how to respond, the appropriate way to respond, and the right people to report to.
Actually,
do you
want to
talk a little
country.
Bit?
Go ahead.
Judy, do you want to explain a little bit about the upcoming DVD project?
Right. We're actually working. There was a great opportunity that the state, the Department of Children and Families, and the New Jersey Task Force on Child Abuse and Neglect put out a request for proposals, essentially, for a training for child abuse reporting and identification training that's geared towards a multidisciplinary audience, but also including educators and school communities. And so we took up, you know, applying for some of that funding. And one of the things that we're working on is an education DVD that we can supply free of charge to schools, daycares, educators, churches, whoever is interested in doing some education on child abuse reporting and identification. And it will be a multi-chapter DVD that actually walks through what child abuse is, recognizing the signs, both the physical signs but also the emotional signs When you're dealing with sexual abuse, there's not always physical signs. So talking a little bit about behaviors and you know, also looking at behaviors not only of the child, but behaviors of the rest of the people around the child, the parents' behaviors, talking a little bit about grooming with sexual abuse, and then talking about appropriate ways to report, who to report to. New Jersey, like many states, has a dual system where you report child abuse and neglect to the division of to the Department of Children and Families only in a situation where the family member or caretaker is the abuser. So if a child's abused by a neighbor, a family friend, a stranger, someone outside of that family relationship, they are actually not referred to that department. That's strictly a law enforcement referral. So there's actually kind of a two-tiered system here for child abuse. So helping people know where exactly to report the abuse, also appropriate response. You know, one of the scariest things, if a child comes to you and says this has happened to them, how do you respond to them? How do you react? Teaching, you know, people to stay calm, you know, to not place blame, to make sure that the things that they're saying are comforting, and ensuring the safety, but also making the child feel comfortable to continue sharing. So we're looking to hopefully have that.
Are these the different chapters in the DVD that you're talking about?
Yep, they'll be different. Yep, they're going to have different components, things geared specifically towards educators, but also a section geared towards law enforcement for dealing with responding to a situation, recognizing child abuse, maybe when they're responding to something else, they're responding to a noise complaint, and they walk in and find a situation that might be a neglect situation where there's children unattended or drugs and alcohol, things like that going on. So really, you know, having this tool that people can have at their disposal, not kind of just a one-time, we're coming in and educating you, but they can continue to use it to retrain, to hone their skills.
I don't know who will have the ownership of this DVD, but I hope you're going to put it at least on your website, and we'd certainly love to put it on ours if it's someday available. We have to take advantage of, you know, of the new technologies that we have by way of, you know, of educating and enlightening and so forth. And you know, this is a big part of what, again, we're trying to do for the whole country. And when we find something that's as useful as what you're describing right now, we certainly would invite you to let us know when it's ready. And if you're willing to, we'll be happy to either link back to your site to where it's going to be, or put it on our own, or both. But this is exactly the kind of thing that we need to do. You know, there are a whole bunch of what's called mandated reporters around the country, and that, for people who don't know, means people who, because of their job description, are required to report a case of suspected child abuse. And, of course, teachers and counselors and doctors and nurses and law enforcement people and so forth across the country are included in that list. We argue that everybody should be a mandated reporter, but be that as it may, we also need to provide training for these people. What are you looking for? You know, what can you do about it? And how do you not overreact? And how do you talk calmly and elicit the right story to decide whether or not there's something there, you know, really there to report? And then how do you report it and to who and so forth? So we really need these tools. And even though it might be specific to New Jersey, we'd still love to help you. Yes, go ahead.
What you said about mandating reporting is actually correct. Actually, in New Jersey, and what we tell people when we go out is, New Jersey, everyone is a mandated reporter. You know, the statute reports that anybody who has knowledge of child abuse must report it. It doesn't specify what your profession is. It's a statute that if you have knowledge of child abuse or neglect, you must report it. So technically, you know, we like to think that everyone is a mandated reporter according to New Jersey law. So,
well, it's probably a misdemeanor, unfortunately. So, I mean, we'll see about. Go ahead.
But what we try to do is when we go out into the community, we try to impress upon people that in New Jersey, everyone is a mandated reporter. And not only that, but the simple fact of reporting can result in you saving that child's life. Too often,
absolutely,
we see in the media, you know,
when they go, a child dies as a result of child abuse, and you go back and you interview bystanders and who all say, oh, yes, we noticed this. We noticed the child wasn't properly dressed for the weather. We noticed that the child was always hungry. We noticed that there were injuries on the child. But, you know, we felt that it wasn't our business to say. And we try to educate that it's everybody's business. And that if you don't report, a child could potentially die. So therefore, you cannot look the other way. It's everyone's responsibility.
Well, I'm glad to know that New Jersey's among the group that makes everybody mandated a reporter, but I also know that in most cases, and I believe New Jersey is one of them, it's still a misdemeanor, so it's not a very serious, you know, crime.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to bring John Chapman on now to give another comment, and this is the gentleman, of course, who has 25 years, he's now retired from law enforcement, but was a detective and worked on a lot of child abuse cases. And I know John is, because we talked about it the other night, of the same opinion I am. This needs to be a really serious, you know, penalty to get people to pay attention, right, John?
That's exactly right.
We're talking about saving kids' lives, or not.
That's exactly right.
It should be serious. You know?
I do have one question. I think what you're doing is phenomenal. Is every county in New Jersey set up in one of these type houses, or is it Morris County unique but the only operation
not,
like this?
Not currently. Not every every county has a multidisciplinary team, a working MDT, as they call it, team that conferences, case conferences, child abuse cases. But as a child advocacy center, not every county has one. The goal, obviously, of the National Children's Alliance is to set up a child advocacy center in every county in the country. Currently, I believe, and I apologize to the rest of my state mates,
I think we have... I used to know the number, and I don't know it anymore. I was hoping you did.
I believe we have 6 accredited child advocacy centers in the state, and three associate or developing programs, which means they're working towards their accreditation. I know we do have 3 nonprofit models, and then the rest are all prosecutor-based.
And the total number of child advocacy centers that belong to this, you know, umbrella group is in the hundreds. It should be in the thousands, obviously, but I don't know that number. I used to know that number. It was a few hundred.
It's moved up quite a bit. They've made a big push to get child advocacy centers started throughout the and there are some very strong programs going. So I believe they are in, you know, getting up into the thousands, but I think their goal is to, you know, be in the several thousands at some
point.
Well,
it should be one, you know, in striking distance of where everybody lives, basically.
Right.
Let me ask you this. Maybe you covered it earlier. And you're right on target. When you here in Virginia, we have CPS or social services, we call them. Social services will come out with me or another detective if it's a family or custodial type abuse. And if the child is abused by a neighbor, like you're saying, or a family friend or what have you, there's no custodial issue there. Do you still offer those services even though they're not? Not going through social services or a child protective agency?
That's especially when we offer those services, because those are the cases when they really have no other option.
Right.
At least if they're involved with the division, they have counseling options potentially available to them at some point. They have services. When they don't have that, they're left on their own. You know, there's a really big disconnect between the two. You can have you could have 2 children abused by the same person. You know, one child is that person's daughter, and the one child is her friend, and they'll receive 2 different levels of service because just of the nature of the relationship between the victim and the abuser.
Right.
So that's really where we step in to really offer those services, because they don't have anywhere else to go.
That's exactly right. Now, let me ask you this. For future services or things like that, do y'all take insurance? If these kids have insurance, do private insurance, will you take insurance payments? I mean, is there a way for these kids to continue the services?
Well, we do.
State cuts them off, but you're insured by Blue Cross Blue Shield or one of these other insurance companies. Do you work with insurance companies to continue the services, or do they have to go out and get other services?
No, no. We all of our services are free of charge, and we don't look at it. We're especially there when the state does cut off services.
Right.
So once the state, a lot of the times if the state is offering services, we don't get involved. If the state is no longer offering services, that's when we step in.
I see. Well, very, that's
and,
I mean, wonderful program. I mean, as a detective and interviewing many, many kids, I applaud you having that's a great resource to have a center like that where you have everything at your fingertips as a detective. I just think it's wonderful. And I just want to congratulate you. I hope anybody's out there listening, if they go to your website, to please donate. I think it's a phenomenal, phenomenal resource for the police as well as the prosecutor's office and for the child itself and the family.
Yeah, it's a community problem, and it needs to be a community solution. And we need to all become engaged in helping to resolve it. As Carol says, put a dent in the statistics of child abuse, which are astronomical and far worse than most people have any idea. And of course, that's what you do, Judy, when you go out into the community and you talk to these people, you drum into them the real deal, how it really is. You know, there's no way, statistically speaking, that we don't know children that are being abused as community members. We have to know them.
That's the one thing we always tell people as well, is that this isn't a problem isolated to one area, one socioeconomic group. It touches everywhere. I mean, Morris County, for those that aren't familiar with it, is a relatively affluent county. It's a suburban place, and we're known as a relatively affluent place. And I tell people when we go out, we have cases come in from every town in Morris County, including the one that, you know, you live in. So it's happening here. It's happening everywhere. It's not something that's someone else's problem.
And it happens to all types of children, and the perpetrators come from every walk of life, too. And
absolutely.
They work very hard at grooming us as a community into finding it hard to believe that that person could have anything to do with child abuse when we first find out. Because they've Sadinskied the community into believing in them for so long.
My partner used to tell me there's a predator in every neighborhood, regardless of where.
Oh, there is.
Unfortunately.
I think it's statistically impossible that we don't know predators. We just don't know who they are.
Absolutely. I tell people when I go out into the community is a child abuser doesn't ask to look at a child's checkbook before they abuse them.
That's exactly right.
No.
Unfortunately, it stretches across every socioeconomic group. No one is immune.
Yep.
Right. All right. Let's open up for Ed and Carol, and so all of us will be on the line now. Everybody behave. but we'll finish the show with everybody joining in, and there's still a chance if somebody wants to call in and be included, they're certainly welcome to do that. They just have to dial 646-595-2118 and push an additional number 1 and the pound sign. 646-595-2118. But we have plenty of voices and enthusiasm on the show for Judy and Maria from Deirdre's house. Again, it's Deirdre's, plural, as if it's plural, deirdreshouse.org. And go through the website, no matter when you're listening to the show. A lot of people, Maria and Judy, listen, you know, on demand later. But now that we've told them where the web address is, and of course it's part of the description of the show, they can look for themselves at your website, and they'll find, you know, the programs, what's across the top programs, news events, child abuse information about volunteers, and so forth. It's a really nicely put together website, very succinct, and describes a lot of what we're talking about tonight. Although the ladies have done an excellent job, I think, in giving us a flavor of the kind of services that they offer and should be offered in every community across the country. At least that's what I think. That's just my opinion. What do you think, Carol?
Let me tell you something. Excuse me. I did some research on you and on your organization, and I really, really knew that you're going to be top-notch, and that's exactly what you are. I'm in Warren County now instead of in Morris County. And I don't know. I don't think Warren County offers near as much as what Morris County offers. So I try to go into the schools, okay? I went into the high school over here in Phillipsburg because that's where I am right now. and I didn't know how it's going to be received. And I went in with the information that we have, and we speak about a lot of the things that you had mentioned. And so I had taken it in, and actually I was very well received. This is something that you have to go into the school systems everywhere, and I would like to also speak to the middle schools. You know, those kids very much are at risk, I think, too, even more so than the high school kids, you know, if they haven't already been abused. And because they're more gullible and so forth, they're not as smart. So, you know, I think it's wonderful what you're doing. And again, every county needs this. Every state needs it. I can't stress enough. I talk all the time about going into the schools, because if we empower our children, if we teach the educators, if their children are being abused at home, if they are, then they can feel free and comfortable. Now, you know what I mean by that, comfortable going to maybe a counselor. And I want all the counselors to be skilled at this, to be taught how to, you know, speak to a child so that they don't scare the child even more, you know, if the child has actually come forward. Because it takes a lot of guts to spill the truth out. We know this. It takes a lot of guts for that child to say, hey, I'm being abused at home, or hey, the guy down the street got a hold of me, and they need someone to talk to, and maybe they don't feel like there's anyone in their family they can speak to. So if the schools are equipped with that knowledge, if they're equipped, if they are given the proper tools to work with, then I think that's one way to fight the predators.
Right. And the other thing to remember that we tell people is that children usually don't make this up.
No.
You know, children don't, and a lot of children, and they, you know, the studies show that most children at some point recant or take back their disclosure,
mm-hmm.
which also is not something that it says that it didn't happen. It's actually a normal response. So, you know, people tend to want to believe it didn't happen, want to believe it was a mistake, it's a misunderstanding, but, you know, children don't make these stories up. When children disclose this, it's happened, or
mm-hmm.
so it's something that they need to be believed is the first step. And when we go out and educate, that's the first thing we say. You have to believe the child. They're telling
you
the truth.
That's right. Absolutely.
We have to believe the child, and we have to take as quick action as we can, because, as we know, the average predator commits 120 acts of assault before they're caught. That's the average.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time. So this is, you know, you're stopping additional predators, you know, and you're saving additional lives. It's not just the life of the child that you're currently dealing with. It's all those other kids that would come down the pike afterwards, unless we can stop, you know, put a stop to this particular person now. And who knows how many kids you can save by doing that. It's not just, and it's also very interesting to me, and congratulations for doing it, that you don't drop the child who enters your system when they turn 18, for example, and that you also engage with the family, as we learned with John's question,
mm-hmm.
and offer them some services, too, because it's really a family problem, too. I mean, everybody's traumatized. The whole community is when we find out that somebody that we thought we were able to trust, the principal of the school, turns out to be a pedophile. That shocks everybody, and it affects everybody. So,
one of the things that you know as a survivor, Bill, is that there are different stages of your life. There's different things that affect you from the abuse. So we try mm-hmm. to track the child through their different, you know, we start out with children who are very young, 4, 5, 6 years old,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
as they get older, there's different issues that will come up as a result of the abuse, especially as they're approaching puberty
mm-hmm.
in adolescence. There's different things that come out as they recall the abuse, because sometimes when they're very young, they don't actually appreciate the wrongness of what's happened to them. But as they start to get older, it really starts to hit them hard, and we have to make sure that we're there for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great. I think you're wonderful.
It's typical for an abused child to, in their adolescence and in their 20s, start to, you know, if they're not if they're not tracked and helped, to take on a feeling of somehow they were responsible, and embarrassment and shame and all these things that make a person then shut down or make terrible choices in their life until they get back into recovery. So that's great, because you're looking for behaviors more than incidences of child abuse at that point. You're looking for the child's our reaction as abused children is, you know, immature, obviously. But we're really looking for some solution to not feel the way we feel. And, you know, this will result in us doing all kinds of obsessive and compulsive behaviors. Some are addictive behaviors. Mm-hmm. We have a problem with assimilating into appropriate groups for ourselves. In fact, we often choose lower companions, as they say. You know, we feel more comfortable in that environment and so forth. So there's lots of things to look for in a child who's been abused through their adolescence and 20s, for sure. Carol, you're all on. Go ahead.
Parents a card, a laminated card, that so sometimes when they parents feel like a child is ready to stop counseling and they stop counseling after a month, you know, after 6 months or a year, we actually give the parent a laminated card to put in their wallet for signs to look for that the child is in further stress because of what's happened to them, indicating that they need to come back to the center for further counseling. Because often they do end up terminating counseling, and then after months or years, they come back to us.
Mm-hmm. Good. And we provide that on our website. If you're looking for the kinds of things that were just described, you can go to the resources button on our website. It's the first thing that people encounter, and it's deliberately the first thing they encounter, are a list of about 20 different things that are behavioral, most of them, that are possible indicators that a child is experiencing trauma of some sort, child abuse, or the remnants of their child abuse. And as you said, it's not something you just, you know, you deal with one day and it's done with. It's something that, to some extent, we really carry the rest of our lives. And, of course, the earlier and the more fulfilling our treatment can be, the less impact it has in our lives, because we become comfortable with who we are, you know, and what we've had to deal with in our life. And, you know, like Carol said, she's 30 years into her recovery process. She's about 85% healed most of the time, she says.
Why do you always laugh after you say that?
I think it's a cute way to describe it, but it's accurate.
Oh, okay,
you know?
Okay. I wasn't sure.
Sometimes it's 90% and sometimes it's 75%, but, you know.
Well, actually, that's true.
Scale.
Well, you see, this is what we try to get across to the public, and I don't have to tell you ladies this. When a child is sexually abused, and I've seen domestic abuse, sexual abuse in different lights, and even with the family abuse, and every type of abuse you can imagine, it changes you as a person. You don't even know who you are. And if you don't have supportive people behind you, you grow up totally. I work with kids too. Today even, you grow up twisted. You know, you're just so, you don't know which way to go. You don't know what you do. You don't even know who you are. You have all kinds of many, many, many problems. So your organization, the very fact that when a child comes to you, and then you deal with the family as well, and then you give them information so that they can look back on it and see if they're developing signs again, maybe a post-traumatic stress disorder, or even things that you think that you had cleared up and it's coming back, I think is a wonderful thing. And what we have on our website, we offer an awful lot of information. So when I go across the river, because I do go into Pennsylvania, or when I stay on the Jersey side, more in my area, I deal with what we have and give them the information that we have, and we have quite a bit to offer as well. But I like the way your organization works, and I felt that you were unique, and I was right. You're unique. I think you're great.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, we consider you now a member of our family of adult survivors. You don't have to be a survivor of child abuse to be a part of what we do. You can either be one of those, or in recovery, hopefully, or someone who works on doing what they can to put an end to whatever child abuse is in their community, and therefore reduce the possibility that more children are going to suffer. I mean, you know, so welcome to our family. You're going to be a member of our family in that we will always refer to you as such. We'll carry your show, which is being recorded right now, ad infinitum, along with a description of what you do and a link to your website and so forth. And we have an awful lot of people who listen to the shows after the fact because they're all archived, and there's a specific page that we have each year that for recommended shows, and this will certainly be one of them. So thank you so much, ladies, for spending
Thanks,
the time with us. I know it's after hours for you, but we do it at this time slot so that it's possible for the whole country to participate. We only have 5 minutes left, so what we're going to do is we're going to ask Ed any final thoughts for tonight and as to what you've heard.
You know, I think we could probably have them on every night for a week and still not hear enough about what they're doing.
I know.
You're right. But I'm sure you want to thank them for their appearance.
I do want to thank them for coming. I hope to come back, and, you know, they're doing a very important job up there.
They really are. John, some final thoughts to wrap things up? We got 4 minutes. We got plenty of time.
I just want to thank the ladies for coming on and outstanding. And I like to learn more about it, maybe implement some of what they're doing here in Virginia and put some ideas across social services and the police department and the prosecutor's office all coming together. I think it's a great, great program to have all the services in one location, you know, going all over the place. But excellent. I just want to say thank you.
Actually,
you're
we
welcome.
Should announce. Go ahead. Maria.
And we would help you any way we could. That's part of what we do. We do mentor other startup centers. So if you're in need of that type of assistance, please contact us.
Okay.
So we'll be sending people your way. No, now that you've made that offer.
No problem.
Well, I think this is the cat's meow, John, don't you?
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly.
Right now,
you know, like,
what
like,
I would like
I'm, I'm retired now, but I'll definitely put a bug into my some of my partners here in the police department. We can get something like that here in Virginia going.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
I think it'd be a great model. I'm just speechless. I think it's great.
Well, now there is an association that was mentioned before, but we didn't mention a website for it before. Do either of you ladies remember their website that we
yes.
can announce that people can look it up? Yeah,
it's the National Children's Alliance, and since this is a national program, that if you they have a section where you can look up your own local child advocacy program. So if you're somewhere that you need to reach out for help within your own community, you can look on their website and they will point you in the direction to the nearest child advocacy program. And their website is
www.nca-online.org. www.nca-online.org.
.org.
Okay, I got it.
Okay, good.
And we will we'll promote the National Alliance as well. But you ladies are, you know, they're representatives. We are very, very happy that you joined us tonight, and we will continue to advocate for not only you yourselves, but for the Alliance in general. And we will send people your way, Maria. I promise.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Yep. Anything that we can do, I mean, that's part of our work.
All right, Carol, final thoughts?
Well, I just felt that you were going to be, you know, a really good guest, and you were. You're great. And I'm going to tell people all about you because I think you are so good. I think you have a lot to offer. You have a lot to offer, and we're kind of speechless, you know. So anyone out there who listens later on, if you're going to donate, here's a good cause right here. And please do, because we need people like Maria and Judy everywhere. We need Deidre's House everywhere.
Right.
Thank
Again,
you,
it's deirdreshouse.org, deirdreshouse.org.
You're welcome.
And we've been talking to Judy and Maria, who are the program director and the executive director, respectively, of Deirdre's House in Morris County, New Jersey, which is not too far outside New York City. My dad took the train in every day from Morris County. So it's it is an affluent county, partly for that reason. But the need is everywhere. And we want to promote the concept of the CAC across the country, and we'll be happy to do that with you and for you. So you're now, like I say, members of our family. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Bill. We appreciate you having us on.
Thank
okay.
you. And thanks for
and
what you
welcome.
Guys are doing.
You're welcome. When we do this this show 6 nights a week, every night except Saturday, and we always include community participation. Some of our shows are like this one, special guest type shows, and some are open topic. So we invite people to call in and just get into discussions with us. But they're all solution-oriented because we as adult survivors really know this topic from the inside out. It's been our life experience, and now that we're in recovery, we want to do whatever we can to put a dent in the statistics of child abuse. So this is Bill Murray thanking you for listening tonight and saying may God bless you, God bless America, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
Blog Talk Radio.